Hey everybody, Rob Maurer here, and as I mentioned at the end of yesterday's episode, we are going to be doing live episodes for the rest of this week. Editor Jocelyn's got some other things going on, so we'll see how the rest of the week goes with the live episodes. But today we're going to be talking about some new information from Cathie Wood and ARK Invest. So they've put out a note following AI Day, as you can see on screen there. And then Cathie was also on Bloomberg today, sharing some more thoughts on Tesla. So we'll go through those comments. We've got an update on FSD beta from Elon Musk. He shared a tweet earlier about a targeted timeline there for the long-awaited FSD beta button. And then we've also got, I think about 50 people sent me this today, but we've got this rant from Sandy Monroe to talk about. I'll share my thoughts on that. Some news on the Chevy Bolt, Lucid, and SpaceX. So we'll go through all that. We'll start off with the Elon Musk tweet, and then we'll get into ARK Invest. So in case you didn't see it already, many of you probably have, but Elon Musk sharing out a little while ago, about an hour ago, an update on FSD beta. So he says, quote, somebody ask, any update on public FSD beta? Elon says, quote, we should be there with beta 10, which goes out a week from Friday. No point release this week. It will have a completely retrained neural net. So we'll need another few weeks after that for tuning and bug fixes. Best guess is public beta button in about 4 weeks. So, no 9.3 this Friday, as usual. Not as usual, but usually Tesla releases a point release, so 9.3 would have been this Friday, every 2 weeks. It sounds like they're skipping that, but then next week are going to go straight to beta 10. So that's different than what Elon had previously said, where he'd said we'd get 9.3, 9.4, then probably 10, then maybe 10.1 or 10.2 would be the beta button or the public release. Which would have put that somewhere in mid-October, the last time we calculated that timeline. Looks like this would be a little bit sooner than what we had previously expected. So obviously, with any timeline like this, we have to take it with a bit of a grain of salt. But Elon here is actually moving up the timeline from his last mention of any sort of timeline. So we'll see. I'm excited regardless for beta 10 to hopefully go out next week. Elon has previously set a lot of updates with that, obviously with it being a whole number release. So we'll see. Okay, so after AI Day, we've got new comments here from ARK Invest. We'll just briefly go through this. They put a little quick note out about it, just saying AI Day highlighted Tesla's artificial intelligence prowess. No surprise that ARK is probably, you know, pretty impressed and happy with what Tesla had talked about at AI Day. But they did put this little chart out just showing Tesla's vertical integration, so you can see sort of major categories of computer hardware, AI software, automotive hardware, sales and service. And then subcategories within each of those major categories. They show legacy OEMs, Waymo, Tesla back in 2018, and then Tesla today, just showing how vertically integrated Tesla has become over time. So the purple is marked as vertically integrated, green here is outsourced. So Tesla basically taking over each of these important areas for obviously eventually operating, you know, a robotaxi fleet and as well as manufacturing that robotaxi fleet. So I guess the one thing that's not specifically purple here yet for Tesla would be fleet management, which is not available because Tesla doesn't actually have a robotaxi fleet operating yet, but obviously Tesla would do that eventually. So yeah, that's what I wanted to share from the note. And then Cathie Wood, as I said, was on Bloomberg today. So I'm not going to play the clip from it here, but I'll just kind of read a couple of quotes that she said. The interviewer started off asking Cathie just about, you know, how they're feeling about Tesla after AI Day, if it's still one of their, you know, high conviction holdings. Obviously it is, but Cathie answered that saying, without a doubt, every passing day, especially the more we learn about their AI expertise and how they're really driving the space, so to speak, much faster than I think anyone else is right now. We believe they have the pole position and we've increased our estimate here. So her estimate there that they're talking about isn't necessarily their Tesla specific estimate. But she did mention that they've increased their total addressable market for robotaxis as a whole. So they've brought that up to $11 to $12 trillion in terms of the opportunity. Cathie noted that that is worldwide, but compared to just the U.S. economy, she said that's about $21, $22 trillion. So this is a huge total addressable market that we're talking about just in the robotaxi section. It's not Tesla's total addressable market. Tesla's would obviously be larger when we think about things like energy and such. So that was kind of where she started off. And then the other point that I found, this was a really short interview, you can see just 3 minutes there. But the other thing that was asked about was, okay, how are you thinking about the chip shortage right now? What are you guys hearing? And Kathy gave an example of how if you look at U.S. automotive sales annualized each month, which I'll pull up a graph of that in a second, we've actually seen that drop from April into June. So here's that graph, and you can see historically relatively flat, and then obviously last year with the pandemic, sales dropped off, recovered, and then kind of peaked here in April. So at an annualized rate of 19 million, if you watch the interview, Kathy said 18, so the numbers are slightly off here, but directionally, talking the same directions here. So peaking in April and then now declining back down in May and then in June, again, annualized rates here down to 16 million. Kathy's number was about 15 million. So what Kathy is saying is that even though manufacturers continue to talk about these chip shortages, she thinks that's not the only thing going on here. So I'll read the quote. "I do not believe that is only because of a chip shortage. I think it is the beginning of a massive transformation towards electric. A lot of individuals are not buying cars because they know anything they buy now is going to depreciate much more quickly now that electric vehicles are taking off." And then that's the end of the quote. And then she said that she recently listened to the Magna conference call. So Magna is a huge automotive supplier. They work very closely with a lot of different automakers to help with their manufacturing. So she said that she listened to that earnings call. That was back in about 2 weeks ago now. And she said, quote, "One analyst asked the CEO, hey, were you surprised that GM changed its forecast within 1 month? Were you as surprised as we were? And Magna said, yes, something else is going on out there," end quote. So Magna said yes, and then Kathy is saying something else is going on out there, aside from the chip shortage causing this spike down in sales in June. So this is an area that I definitely think that sort of transformation is going to come eventually, but I think Kathy's giving a little bit too much credit to the average car buyer in this case. I don't think a lot of people are really considering the impact of electric vehicles on depreciation of brand new internal combustion engine vehicle sales yet at this point. Disruptions like this, I think, tend to sneak up on people a lot more, and I don't think people are quite as considerate in their buying choices as people that are, closely following the industry like we are might be. So I think it's very much too early for people to be considering that in their purchasing decisions. So I do attribute it to other things. We'll definitely see. But I did go back and check just that Magna call because I was kind of curious about that. So here was the question that was asked by the analyst. "Do you think you fully incorporated some of the down year-over-year comments that GM made on production?" So I don't know exactly what GM said, but I'm assuming they said that the second half of the year would be down year-over-year, which may have been surprising given last year's not great numbers. So then Magna answered it, and I didn't really see them saying kind of yes, as Kathy put it. It sounded more to me like they were saying, yes, we were kind of aware of it. Like they said that they've received information from all their customers. They say that reflects their production schedules in the last week and a half. It's pretty current. Things are pretty volatile. So I didn't really take that as them being surprised by GM or by this question. And then I did actually find in their opening comments, they did acknowledge a couple of things that are important. So what I actually think is happening here, and it looks like Magna is agreeing, is that we saw a huge spike in demand here. There was inventory available here in Q1. Automakers sold through that inventory. Now we're at low inventory that's not available. And I think that's probably what's driving June annualized sales down. And we see here Magna saying, sort of the same thing. So they say strong auto demand coupled with OEM production disruptions this year have led to a historically low dealer inventory levels, particularly in North America. So I think that is also validated by the fact that if you've been following pricing in the automotive space right now, things are crazy. In the used vehicle market and the new vehicle market, prices are just super high right now. That's not indicative of any sort of demand shortage, actually the opposite. So as much as I would like to say, give credit to consumers for being that thoughtful and forward-looking to consider depreciation on internal combustion engine vehicles, I just don't think we're quite there yet. I think this disruption is going to be more of a slap in the face to to the consumers than a slow change over time. So I don't think we're quite there yet. Magna also said in regards to the chip shortage, quote, significant chip shortages continue to impact OEM production into the second half of 2021. So I thought this was interesting. Just wanted to kind of provide some context on that, given those comments from Kathy today. And then I have been just getting a few questions on the chip shortage in general. So it obviously is still continuing to be an issue. When we think about Tesla specifically, I'm not quite as worried about it. Obviously, Tesla has shown the ability to be highly adaptive. That's not going to solve every single problem, but you know, they seem better positioned than most. Tesla also wasn't likely in a position where they were cutting orders from semiconductor companies like we may have had other OEMs doing over the last 12 to 18 months. And then Tesla should also be in a position where they would have had planned for bigger orders for this period of time. Remember, we had previously heard that Giga Berlin was supposed to start production kind of in July. So Tesla should have been able to plan for that capacity for their supply chain. And even if they're not starting in July, which obviously that's gone past by now, but yeah, not starting in July. So they should have the supply chain should have been ready for that though. So Tesla should have some extra supply chain capacity, hopefully alleviating any supply chain issues that exist right now. You know, it's not going to solve everything, but in terms of being prepared for this, I think those combination of things put Tesla kind of as well prepared as you could possibly be. So those are my thoughts on that. The next thing here, again, tons of people sent this to me today. Normally, this isn't probably something that I would cover, but just because of the amount of interest that it got, I'll just pass it along just for people that are curious and share a couple of my thoughts. Sandy Monroe had this rant today. It was about 12 minutes long, and it was very passionate, I would say. Definitely go check it out. But it was basically just about, okay, the United States in general not necessarily acting all that supportive of Tesla as a company, which I definitely agree with the spirit of that. We've talked about this before, you know, Tesla being kind of snubbed from that White House event. Seems like no one in the White House or the current administration is really even willing to say the word Tesla, unless they're kind of put on the spot and have to say it. So stuff like that is frustrating. I've expressed my frustration on that in the past too, but Sandy was specifically talking about the NHTSA investigation, so I just wanted to kind of not necessarily argue with that, but just kind of clarify a couple things and share my point of view on that. So I don't really have a problem with NHTSA investigating Tesla. I think it is something, I'm trying to think of like how to best phrase this, but Tesla's on the leading edge of technology. It shouldn't be all that surprising that regulators are going to be looking at that with closer interest. So we've talked about this. It's only a preliminary investigation at this point in time. We went through the statistics. I don't think it necessarily warrants that sort of an investigation, but at the same time, because Tesla's on the leading edge and because this is clearly the way things are going, I actually think it's a pretty good use of regulatory resources to learn about it, see what Tesla's doing, make sure that everything is good. You know, if I didn't have as much knowledge about Tesla as I do, I would probably want some sort of regulatory education. And maybe that doesn't warrant an investigation fully, but I don't think it's bad that they're looking at it necessarily. Sandy commented on just the timing of it being suspect with it happening just a couple of days before AI Day. Fair. I think my problem is more about the media coverage and just the amplification of the investigation versus the actual investigation itself. So I think that's more of the disappointing stuff, more of the administration's unwillingness to kind of acknowledge what Tesla has done, the progress that Tesla is making in terms of the direction that, you know, we seem to be trying to want to head. So that's frustrating. But as I said before, there's like 30 different preliminary investigations going on, and it's at any given point in time. So it's not like this is, you know, it's not like all their efforts are solely focused on Tesla. Sandy did also say that Congress is investigating Tesla. I think that's probably based on those two senators that wrote a letter to the FTC requesting that they investigate Tesla. As far as I know, there's nothing actually going on there. So I just wanted to clarify that point as well. I don't think Congress is investigating Tesla unless there is something that I missed, which seems unlikely. The other point that I would make is that Sandy just drove Ford's Blue Cruise. I get this messed up because people on Twitter keep calling it Blue's Clues. I had to re-record that section yesterday when I mentioned it just because of that. But anyway, Ford's Blue Cruise. Sandy Monroe tested it out, as we talked about, and It seems to have sparked some of this, the passion that came through today. Clearly, Sandy is less than impressed with those efforts. He used not the strongest language, but language I definitely don't generally use on Tesla Daily. So again, just go check that out if you're interested. All right, a couple more topics today. First one, so we did talk about the GM Chevy Bolt recall probably a week or two ago. This happened a few days ago, but we just haven't had a chance to cover it yet. Chevy has now expanded that recall to all Chevy Bolts. So previously it was, I think, just through 2019. Don't remember exactly, but they've expanded that. So now it's every single Chevy Bolt from 2019 to 2022. Even from the beginning, the newest expansion is 2019 to 2022 model years. So adding 73,000 Bolts to the recall. Total now is 142,000 cars. Previously, they had estimated the recall cost at $800 million. They now expect this new recall to add $1 billion to that total, so $1.8 billion to recall these 142,000 Chevy Bolts. So obviously that's super devastating for that lineup for GM. Just to run through a couple of figures on that, $1.8 billion amortized over 142,000 cars, that's $12,500 per car. So if we assume a $40,000 average selling price on these Chevy Bolts, that's a 31% hit to gross margin. And obviously Tesla's not even at 31% gross margins. Tesla's more like 20 to 25. So GM definitely not getting a 31% margin on the Chevy Bolt. I'm guessing they're like slightly gross margin positive, but even then that doesn't account for the operating costs. I'm not sure exactly where their marketing costs fall in their on their margin lines, but yeah. This is a super unprofitable program for for GM in total now. Sorry, excuse me. Very unprofitable now with this $1.8 billion recall. That's definitely causing them to drop into a loss for the Chevy Bolt program as a whole. Not to mention the fact that they just have to redo all the sales in these cars now, and that's opportunity cost for those sales being used in other products, whether that's for Chevy, GM, or for other automakers. So extremely costly, definitely disappointing to see. But you know, this is what we've been talking about over the last few years. Like, listen to Tesla Daily back in 2018, 2017. You know, one of those years, I think the Chevy Bolt won Motor Trend's Car of the Year. Things like that, they don't necessarily matter when a program might not be profitable, might not be being done in volume. We talked about the volume for the Ford F-150 Lightning yesterday. There's just a lot more to a successful electric vehicle than, you know, what range it gets or, you know, what price point they can hit. You have to consider the profit. You have to consider the longevity of the batteries. There's so much more that goes into that. So disappointing to see for electric vehicles in general, and hopefully GM can get that figured out with the next iteration. All right, last couple of things here. So first up, Lucid today announcing that they are actually going to be splitting their Air Dream Edition, so the top of the line first production vehicle, into two trims. So they're going to have a performance version and a range version, which they're spinning this as a positive. This is not a positive. Basically, they're taking the top specs that previously would have fit into one vehicle, and now they're separating them into essentially two vehicles. They did add, I think, a little bit more horsepower to the performance version. I'm not sure it materially affected any of the actual performance stats. But then they've got this Dream Range version with less horsepower, slower 0 to 60, and that's going to be the version that obviously gets that top range. So I do think they added a little bit of range too. It's not clear. I think they said that they don't have the EPA range tests yet, currently in process. They had Motor Trend test it, which doesn't necessarily mean a whole lot. They tested at 67 miles an hour, which is probably actually going to be better than, give them worse range, so reflect better on Lucid than what the EPA test would. But we'll wait until some of those more detailed pieces of information come out. Anyway, I think what's happening here is Lucid was not able to hit the specs with both high performance and range, so they had to kind of just split it up into two vehicles to make sure that they were meeting their promise, at least in those individual areas. Sorry if you can hear my upstairs neighbor. I think they're starting to vacuum. Okay, this is going longer than I thought we would go, so we'll move on to the last piece here. Quick one. So SpaceX is considering looking at a tunnel, obviously probably from the Boring Company, somewhere near Boca Chica. Obviously, they have a lot of road closures down there just with, you know, everything that they have to do in terms of transportation and testing of rocket equipment. So sounds like to help open up throughput, traffic throughput, they're looking at putting in a tunnel in that area. So lots of prospective projects here for the Boring Company, and it's going to be exciting to see. Hopefully a lot of these come into production, I guess, and under construction in the next year or two. All right, so yeah, that was longer than I thought it was going to be. Let me just pop into the comments here for a quick second, make sure that everything is golden. And thanks to those of you that have liked the video. Someone with a super chat telling me to check my email. Great advice. I will do that. Sorry, I'm pretty bad at responding to those things. I do try to read everything, but sometimes I can't even get through that. Okay, let's see. This will be the last one I take, but Andreas here saying, Elon didn't look too happy on AI Day. He was kind of in a bad mood. What was your impression, Rob? I'll be honest, my first thought was kind of the same when he came out on stage, but you know, I think as the presentation moved on, I think he was just fine. You know, who knows what the reason for that was. I don't think it was probably anything particularly related to the event. I saw some people say that he looked upset when like the Tesla bot dance thing, the human dance thing was going on. That wasn't my impression. I think if you rewatch that, he was off to the side and he was kind of laughing at it. Maybe it went on like a little bit too long, but yeah, I think it was fine. It's not something I would worry about. So yeah, not too bad. All right, cool. Well, we'll be back for another live episode tomorrow. Thanks, you guys. As always, you can also make sure you're subscribed and signed up for notifications. You can find me on Twitter at Tesla Podcast, and I'll see you tomorrow for the Thursday, August 26th episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.